Welcome to the Reformed Academy podcast, a production of Reformed Forum. My name is Camden Busey. Reformed Academy seeks to provide educational guidance through a structured learning environment. Students may enroll in courses, watch videos, study suggested books and articles, complete assignments, interact with other students, and even engage our faculty online and in person. Join more than 3,800 students in 75 countries who are growing in their knowledge and love for Jesus Christ, revealed in all of Scripture. Take responsibility for your theological education. Redeem your time. Theological study is not just for pastors and scholars. Our mission is to present every person mature in Christ. And so, in this episode, we continue with Lane Tipton's course, Introduction to the Theology and Apologetics of Cornelius Van Til. This is part of an 8-course series we have developed on Van Til for our fellowship in Reformed Apologetics. Today, we will consider the creator-creature distinction and relation.
To continue to make the point Van Til is intent on making, let us consider both now the creator-creature distinction and the creator-creature relation. The creator-creature distinction and the creator-creature relation. The best way to try to capture Van Til's point is that the ontological trinity, God as self-contained and immutable and impassible, that God as such, who is distinct from the creature, that God as such is the God who relates to the creature in the work of creation and in the special act of providence that we call covenant. The ontological trinity as such relates to man as such in the creator-creature relation without the creature participating in the being of God and without God participating in the being of the creature. There is no ontological participation either from the creature to God or from God to the creature in the creator-creature relation. And so this distinction, the distinction of the immutable and impassible and simple ase triune God, that distinction remains in the relation to the creature. And so any idea of creation or covenant changing God or occasioning some modification to either his attributes, his essence, or the persons of the Trinity is ruled out entirely, according to Van Til. Amplifying this point that we've been making from both Common Grace in the Gospel and the Introduction to Systematic Theology, a point that's made much more broadly in other works in Van Til, he has a letter to Carl F. Henry, and he says this: starting with the creator-creature distinction as basic to one's thought, one need not, and in fact cannot, after that, discuss such concepts as time and eternity by themselves. Pause. What does he mean by that? Time and eternity are not abstract conceptions because we're thinking concretely about the triune God as eternal and concretely about the creature as temporal. That is an absolute ontological distinction between the triune God on the one side and the creature on the other side. Now, to pick up that quote: as then it is fatal to fail to introduce the creator-creature distinction at the outset of one's thought, so it is also fatal to fail to think of eternity as exclusively a characteristic of God and of time as exclusively a characteristic of the created world. Pause on that quote. What Van Til is saying is that in the distinction between God, the Creator, and man as the creature, eternity is exclusively a characteristic of God's. Temporality is exclusively a quality of the creature, a characteristic of those things created. And there's no third thing, no intermediate category between the two. He goes on to say then, if you were to confuse these, he says, it would be to make God subject to the conditions of his creatures, subject to change, etc. Here's what he's saying. A different way to put it. In the creator-creature distinction, God is infinite, eternal, and unchangeable in his being, wisdom, power, holiness, justice, goodness, and truth. The creature is temporal and dependent at every point on this immutable and ase self-contained triune God. That distinction is maintained at every point in the relation between the triune God and the creature. The creator-creature relation does not negate or modify the creator-creature distinction. And if it did, what would happen? God would then become subject to temporality. God would become subject to change. And the qualities that we ascribe to creatures would be qualities that we ascribe to God. Now, what does Van Til say the result of that would be? He says it is fatal. That's the strongest language Van Til could use. It is fatal to introduce to the Creator the qualities of temporal, mutable change, just as it is fatal to introduce to the creature the qualities of self-existent, eternal existence. In the words of Common Grace in the Gospel, page 79, the self-contained ontological trinity is indeed our interpretive concept everywhere. And so, what is Van Til's point? As the creator, God does not participate in the becoming of the creature at any point. Nor does the creature participate in the immutability and eternity of God at any point. There is no univocal point that the two have in common. They are distinguished at every point in the relation. This is of absolute importance to Van Til's perspective. So, the most terse way to encapsulate Van Til's point is in this sentence. The creator-creature distinction must be maintained at every point in the creator-creature relation, and that is the place where mystery is found. We do not introduce temporal properties or qualities to God in his condescension, nor do we introduce eternal categories to man as the creature formed in his image. God remains God. Man remains man. The distinction is maintained in the relation. Now, this leads us then to ask the question, how do we speak of these lines that bring into view creation and covenant and providence? How do we understand God's relation to the creature as God condescends to relate to Adam, for instance, in the Garden of Eden? Van Til is not creative on this particular point. He explicitly follows the theology of the Reformed tradition, and behind that, the Augustinian tradition, by affirming and applying what's called the Reformed absolute relative distinction when it comes to attributes of God, and especially when it comes to anthropomorphic language. Anthropomorphic language that speaks of God condescending, relating, acting in history. in the works of creation, covenant, special acts of providence, miracles. God acts in history. And the question is, how do we understand those acts of God that fall in time if God himself is categorically distinguished from time at every point? How do we understand the nexus of that relation between the immutable and eternal triune creator on the one side and the mutable temporal creation on the other side? How do we explain this? The answer is found in anthropomorphic language, and Van Til follows Bavinck and a number of other Reformed theologians on this point. I want to give you a few quotations from Bavinck and a couple from Van Til that are quite useful. They are a bit extended, but you can read along with them. Here's Bavinck. Scripture necessarily speaks of God in anthropomorphic language. Yet, however anthropomorphic its language, it at the same time prohibits us from positing any change in God. There's change around, about, and outside of him, and there is change in people's relation to him, but there is no change in God himself. Now, here's the key as we pause that quote. What Bavinck is saying is that when God, as the triune creator, relates to the creature in the work of creation, there is change around God, there is change in creatures' relation to God, there is change in the creation and the creature itself, but there is no change in the eternally immutable, actively dynamic triune God, neither in his essence nor in the persons. He goes on to make sure that we don't misunderstand. There is nothing intermediate between these two classes of categories. Nothing intermediate between the creator and the creature. There's no third thing. There are no properties God either takes to himself or wills to be new in the relationship. God relates to the creature out of the fullness of his self-existent, self-complete, self-contained, triune being. And the creature in that relation is truly related to God. But the locus of change is found in the creature. There is no change in God, and there's no intermediate third thing, no tertium quid that the two share when they are brought together in the sovereignly initiated relationship by God. Continuing, Bavinck says, it is a mark of God's greatness that he can condescend to the level of his creatures, and that, though transcendent, he can dwell eminently in all created beings. Without losing himself, God can give himself. And while absolutely maintaining his immutability, he can enter into an infinite number of relations to creatures. Do you hear that language? Without losing himself, without changing, without undergoing process and change, he can give himself in an infinite number of relations without ceasing to be who he is. This is the glory of God. This is the mystery of condescension. So he goes on to say, we should not picture God as putting himself in any relation to any creature of his, as though it could even in any way exist without him. Rather, he himself puts all things in those relations to himself which he eternally and immutably wills, precisely in the way in which and at the time in which these relations occur. There is absolutely no before or after in God. These words apply only to creatures. They apply only to things that did not exist before, but do exist afterward. That's the Reformed Dogmatics, volume 2, pages 158 and 159. Now let me make this even more explicit. First,
Bavinck makes clear, and this is what's underlying much of Van Til's presentation in the IST and in Common Grace in the Gospel and in Defense of the Faith and everywhere else, to be honest, but we're focusing on those two. Bavinck makes it clear that anthropomorphic language, here's the verb, prohibits us from positing any change in God Himself. Anthropomorphic language is prohibitive language. And by prohibitive language, we mean this. There's change around, change about, change outside of Him, and there's change in people's relation to Him, but there is no change in God Himself. That is the concrete point about the nature of every biblical term that applies to God acting in history, no matter how human-like or what, or whether it's an avian or human form or any other form. This applies to all of God's relations to all of His creatures at all times. The entire point, then, about anthropomorphic language is that it staunchly defends the absolute immutability of God precisely in His dynamic relation to creatures. And second, anthropomorphic language demands that there be no intermediate category between God and the creature. When God relates to Adam and creates him as the image of God, and when in an act of special providence He condescends and offers Himself to Adam as His blessedness and fruition on condition of perfect, personal, exact, and entire obedience, those acts, the act of creation, the act of special providence, neither brings about a third thing that would keep, that would enable God to relate to Adam and apart from which He could not relate to Adam. There is the Creator, there is the creature, and there is no tertium quid that relates the two. Third, the essence of the mystery is found just here. And this is as tersely as it can be put. Without losing Himself, God can give Himself and maintain His immutability. Without losing Himself as the Father, Son, and Spirit who subsist entirely as the undivided essence of God distinctly, without losing Himself as the God in whom those perichoretic and coherent relations are exhaustive and personal from all eternity, without losing His immutable and impassible character, God relates to creatures and gives Himself as their blessedness and reward in covenant prior to the fall. And so Bavinck says this: according to Scripture, God is the sum total of all His perfections. The goodness of God manifests itself in various forms depending on the objects toward which it is directed. The goodness of God, when shown to those in misery, is called mercy. The goodness of God, which spares those who are deserving of punishment, is called forbearance or patience. God's goodness is much more glorious when it is shown to those who only deserve evil, and it then bears the name grace. The goodness of God appears as love when it only conveys certain benefits, but conveys God Himself. And so what Bavinck is saying is this, put most basically: God is not like the creature who in giving Himself changes and either diminishes or increases. What we maintain about the creator-creature distinction must be maintained at every point in the creator-creature relation. Now, the reason I gave you the Bavinck quotes is not simply to give you another Reformed theologian among a panoply of others who have said this historically, but it's because Van Til himself quotes from these very portions of Bavinck's Reformed dogmatics. Listen to what Van Til says in the Intro to Systematic Theology, page 211. He says, Bavinck points out, this is Van Til, that the immutability of God has had its enemies. These enemies have been found among those whose thinking has been informed by pagan philosophy, such as that of Heraclitus. Dorner, for instance, sought to harmonize the unchangeability of God with the fact of his active concern for the things of the universe by saying that God is immutable merely in the ethical aspect of his being. God is always love and is always holy. On the other hand, God changed when he actually created the world, and when, in the person of the Son, he became flesh. Bavinck insists, and rightly so, that all these efforts are foredoomed to failure. The scriptures speak anthropomorphically of God and could not do otherwise, but for all that God in himself is immutable. And then he quotes Bavinck, there's change round about him, there's change in the relation of things to him, but there is no change in God himself. You see, God remains absolute apart from the relation to the creature and in relation to the creature. And if you think back to the idealist lecture from early on where we just introduced idealism, we'll be dealing more with it at a later point in this course, in this introduction. This is a laser beam that's pointing out the problem with all forms of correlativism. The idea that God and the creature are in a reciprocal relation and immersed in a common temporal vortex. Now, Van Til also says this in The Theology of James Dane on page 35. He says, the immanent relations within the three persons of the Holy Trinity are the foundation of the relations which the triune God sustains to the world. It is, of course, true that we know nothing about the immanent relations within the persons of the Trinity except through the revelation of this Trinity through Christ in the Scriptures. But since God himself has told us that he is triune in his being, it is this triune being who lies at the foundation of creation and redemption. Unless we maintain the basic importance of the ontological Trinity, God becomes involved in the dynamism of change. You see, there's a dynamism of change that belongs to the creature. There's a dynamism of immutability and impassibility that belongs to the living persons of the ontological Trinity. And that distinction, Van Til wants to make as clear as he can in the creator-creature relation. To be fearlessly anthropomorphic, to be fully anthropomorphic, is to maintain that there is nothing in the creator-creature relation that is not already in the creator-creature distinction, and vice versa. No third thing, no new properties for God, no entrance into the contingency of history from the inside. Now, it's very important that we understand something additional. According to Van Til, the preeminent example after the Enlightenment of the denial of this distinction is found in the theology of Karl Barth, dialectical theology. Karl Barth's dialectical theology stands at the polar far side of what Van Til has been arguing, following Bavinck, following Calvin, following Augustine, following the teaching of the Scriptures. Van Til said that it is dialectical theology, Barth's theology, and its correlativism It's correlativism that lies at the heart of dialectical theology. And let me explain why it's so important to understand that. The dialectical theologians, Barth and those who follow him, reduce divine and human being to a single mode of correlative existence in the Christ event. And Van Til is saying to accept the really contradictory is to accept the idea that the being of God and the being of man are in a common univocal process of becoming one new thing, a tertium quid. Speaking of Barth in the New Synthesis, page 70, Van Til says this: the idea of identifying man's being with his participation in the act of God saving him is really only the modern equivalent of the Greek notion of identifying man with his participation in the changeless being of God. In other words, the error of the Greeks, and this is also an error of Roman Catholicism, is that man is elevated to participate in the unchanging essence of God. The error of Barth is for God to become his opposite and participate in the changing qualities of the creature in a third time, a time distinct from God's time, a time distinct from man's fallen time, the third time of God's event of becoming Jesus Christ, fully actualized at the very alpha point of creation. In other words, the dialectical theologians, Barth and his ilk, affirm ontological correlativism in this way. They affirm a creator-creature distinction abstractly. But once God wills to relate to the creature in a relationship, he is subject to the same temporal and mutable conditions as the creature in a third time where God and man have their being in the singular event that Barth calls, heretically, the Christ event. And so Van Til, in Defense of the Faith, says, take now these two points together. A, that I have consistently stressed the necessity of asking what God is in himself prior to his relation to the created universe, and B, that I have consistently opposed all subordinationism within the ontological Trinity, and it will appear why I have also consistently opposed correlativism between God and the universe, and therefore correlativism between God and man. And if you've ever wondered, what is Van Til's definition of correlativism? Here it is. By correlativism, I understand a mutually interdependent relationship like that of a husband and wife, or the convex and concave side of a disc. I know of no more pointed way of opposing all forms of identity philosophy and all forms of dialectical philosophy and theology. End of quote. What is Van Til saying? He's saying this, that it is Reformed theology that maintains at every point of the creator-creature relation, whether it's creation or incarnation, that God and man do not come to participate in a common third thing that unites the two in a process of reciprocal becoming and development over time. We cannot consistently maintain the creator-creature distinction unless we maintain it in the concrete creator-creature relation. Dialectical theologians would be those who, like Hegel and Barth, uphold a mutually interdependent relationship between God and man. Also, Pannenberg is guilty of this. The Hegelians see the interdependence working itself out in a dialectical historical process that is achieved at the omega point of history. Barth sees the interdependence eternally actualized at the omega point in the Christ event. But what the Hegelians actualize at the omega point of history, Barth actualizes at the alpha point of history, Van Til denies at every point. The distinction could not be clearer. In all forms of correlativism, whether incremental or instantaneous, whether Hegelian or Barthian, God subjects himself permanently to the categories of time and is enveloped within the processes of change and development. Van Til calls that the really contradictory. So to deny the absolute and immutable triune God, to deny that he relates as such to the creation, and to affirm that God partakes of the same temporal contingency that characterizes the created order is the most severe error Van Til claims that you can make in theology, period. See, the ontological Trinity and its implications lies at the deepest structure of Van Til's system of theology and apologetics. And the resolution of this mystery is in God. Let us not try to solve the problem by introducing a third thing that relates God to the creature. That is the root of all forms of error. In fact, I remember when I was interviewed about teaching at Westminster Seminary in 2003, and I was asked what I thought the greatest danger facing the church was. The answer I gave then is precisely the answer that I give now, that I fear we are going to move into ontological correlativism, where God's being is constituted by the events in history that he somehow incorporates into himself and apart from which his identity is not complete. That was a problem then, and it is a problem now. It is a fundamental problem that we must continue to address. So Van Til's point, when it comes to both the doctrine of the Trinity and the philosophy of history, is that the ontological Trinity, the absolute, immutable, self-contained triune God, remains as such in relation to creation. There is the majesty of the mystery. And as such, he alone gives meaning to the historical moment. This is the heart of the full bucket problem. The one who cannot have more glory relates to a creation that gives him glory at every point. And this God does not increase or decrease in his glory or majesty in relating to the creation. And so the central point that we've been driving at here when we're speaking of the Trinity and a Christian philosophy of history, the significance of the moment, is that we must affirm the creator-creature distinction at every point of the creator-creature relation, which leads to fearless anthropomorphism. Fearless anthropomorphism, affirming that the God who relates to the creation in all of its dynamism, in all of its lockstep movements, the God who redeems Israel from Egypt and passes his people through the water of the Red Sea, the God that raised Jesus Christ from the dead in his humanity and brought him to sit at the right hand of God in heaven, this God is a God who does not change like shifting shadows, but expresses his sovereignty in acts that are incomprehensible to the creature at every point. And that is why we worship him. Due to the fact that the ontological Trinity does not change, the moment has its true significance. You must never deny in the distinction what we affirm in the relation. And in this, you see, in the theology of the ontological Trinity, we have our comprehensive principle for our understanding of the nature and meaning of history and all of the relations that comprise it.
Thank you for listening to the Reformed Academy podcast. We hope you enjoyed this lecture. We want to remind you that all of our courses are available online entirely for free at reformedforum.org, and they also include Spanish and Chinese subtitles. But we also want to remind you that we are only able to do this with your support. So if you are excited about this theology and want to enable people around the world to watch and listen to these free resources, and for us to produce many more courses, then please visit us online at reformedforum.org/donate to provide your support. Thank you so much, and we hope you join us again next week on the Reformed Academy podcast.